Your online feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder that BBN is a listener-supported Christian radio and internet ministry. To support us, click donations at bbnradio.org. That's donations at bbnradio.org.
Today on Weekend Connection, we're going to find out about tornadoes, including
1% of tornadoes in the United States are violent. That would be EF4 or EF5. A little bit less than 10% are F2 through F5. And then 90% of them are relatively weak with wind speeds that are, say, less than 100 miles an hour.
We'll also talk about tornado safety. I'm Vic Gregory, and let's get connected. If you think that you're hearing more about tornado activity in the United States, you're not wrong. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, there were 78 more tornadoes in the U.S. in 2022 than the annual average between the years of 1991 and 2010. Today, on Weekend Connection, we'll examine why there is an increase in the number of tornadic events, when they are likely to occur, and what we need to do to protect ourselves if a tornado touches down in our area. Joining me today is Dr. Harold Brooks, who is a senior research scientist with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And Dr. Brooks, we appreciate you joining us today on Weekend Connection.
Good to be with you.
Well, let's start out with explaining a bit about what conditions need to be present for a tornado to form. Would you handle that for us?
Sure can. I think the easiest way to think about it, let's start with the conditions that we need to have a thunderstorm. And that's essentially we need to have lots of warm, moist air near the ground and relatively cool, dry air above that, say maybe 10 to 25,000 feet above the ground. And then we need to have something that lifts the warm, moist air up, a front, a boundary, a dry line, something that will lift that warm, moist air up to where it reaches that relatively dry air above it. And at that point, it'll become buoyant, and just like a hot air balloon, it'll rise on its own. And that's what you're seeing when you see a thunderstorm is that rising air. Now, to make that thunderstorm be severe and potentially tornadic, we want to have it form in an environment in which the winds in the environment of the storm become stronger as you go from the ground up, and typically change direction, usually blowing from out of the south at low levels and out of the west aloft. And when those conditions occur, a thunderstorm that forms that environment will tend to rotate and be much more likely to make a tornado.
Well, for years it was accepted that the region known as Tornado Alley referred to the central United States and Canada. Is it true that Tornado Alley has been drifting eastward in recent years?
Not really. It really depends upon how you define Tornado Alley. Tornado Alley is not a really well-defined term. And if you think of it as just being the occurrence of tornadoes, then we've seen perhaps a 10% increase in the number of tornadoes over the sort of the region around Memphis in the last 40 years, and maybe a 10% decrease over, say, the Texas Panhandle and western Kansas, that sort of a region. And those aren't very large changes in many respects. But the big thing, the reason we thought of it as Tornado Alley wasn't just occurrence. It was the fact that one of the things that characterizes the plains of the U.S. and Canada is that there's a very strong annual cycle to where most of our tornadoes in my area, I live in Norman, Oklahoma, most of the tornadoes around here happen in a three-month period from the middle of March to the middle of June. And most of them happen in a very short period of time during the day. 75% of tornadoes near Oklahoma City are on the ground sometime between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. When you go east in the United States, and we sort of go down to the southeastern part of the U.S., there's really not much of an annual cycle. Tornadoes can happen almost any time of year, and they can happen almost any time of the day. And so they don't have that kind of a nice, repeatable cycle that we could count on when things are happening.
Well, is it true then to say that there has been an increase in tornadic activity in the southeast?
A little bit of one, like about a 10% increase, maybe if you drew a circle of a couple hundred miles in diameter just south of Memphis, you would see about a 10% increase in say the last 40 years. And what we really care about this is it isn't so much the the increase is that that's a particularly vulnerable area. Rural populations are much higher there than they say than they are in the plains, and there's also a lot more poverty and a lot higher fraction of mobile home residents. And so those kinds of things make the populations more vulnerable. The fact that the tornadoes are more likely to occur after dark than they are in the plains also makes them more difficult to get messaging out about them. And so in terms of society, that increase in tornadoes, even though it's not a very large number, it's particularly important for the possible outcomes that we can see from tornadoes.
I can see that. We're talking with Dr. Harold Brooks. He's a senior research scientist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and we're talking about tornadic activity in the United States. Dr. Brooks, over the years, it has been somewhat tricky to predict the development of a funnel cloud. Are we doing any better with that now?
I think we're absolutely doing better at forecasting than we used to. And we forecast tornadoes on a variety of timescales. The Storm Prediction Center, which is responsible for things like all of the tornado and severe thunderstorm watches in the country, they put out forecasts for a day, a calendar day, saying the probability of tornado occurrence in a region. And they do this forecast occasionally out as far as 7 days in advance. But almost all the time, especially if tornadoes are strong, we're putting a forecast out, say, the day before the tornadoes in this region, and by region I'm saying something the size of a state, perhaps, or half of the state, is likely to have tornadoes. And then on the day of the tornado, the Storm Prediction Center puts out watches that say over the next 6 hours, conditions are favorable for tornadoes to form in a relatively small region.
Mm-hmm.
And we're certainly better with those convective outlooks and watches in terms of getting almost all of the events happen inside of those watches and convective outlooks. And, you know, 30 years ago, that certainly wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the finer scale, when we get down to issuing the warnings are issued for a particular storm. It says this storm is either currently producing a tornado or is likely to produce a tornado sometime in the next, say, 30 to 45 minutes. And those warnings are, you know, we get most of tornadoes, and we certainly get most of the strong and violent tornadoes have warnings issued prior to the tornado occurring. And we've reduced the false alarm rate to where you can have more confidence when a warning is issued that something is happening. It may not happen exactly where you live, but it'll happen pretty close to you because those warnings are maybe 15 by 20 miles in size. So they're not very big. And for me, at least, certainly, if it's happening within a few miles of me, I'm pretty comfortable with having taken my safety precautions.
Well, are we seeing an increased number of deaths in the U.S. due to tornadic activity?
Not really. What we have seen, and we wish we could stop this, is that we really haven't seen much of a decrease. In deaths in the last, say, 30 years. If we look at the deaths per 1 million people in the country, so we can take into account the fact that populations have increased a lot. Prior to roughly 1925 in the U.S., a little bit less than 2 people per million in the country died each year in tornadoes. And from 1925 to roughly about 1990, that number dropped by a factor of 10 to less than 2 people per million, or less than two-tenths of a person per million dying in tornadoes every year.
Hmm.
And that's been relatively flat since 1990. And that may well be a result of the increasing population in mobile homes. Mobile home residents are about 15 to 20 times more likely to be killed than permanent home residents. And we have a lot more people live in mobile homes than we did, say, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may be a big part of it, is that we now have a larger fraction of our population in vulnerable areas. We've always made a lot of progress, but we're down now to where, you know, in somewhere on average in the 50s for death tolls each year in the U.S., and that number's been rather stubborn trying to get it to go down.
Mm. Well, let's make this personal. What action should I take if a tornado warning is issued in my area?
Well, to begin with, you need to be prepared to receive information. That's probably the biggest thing, is that even before the tornado warning is issued, you need to know. Our forecasts are certainly good enough to let you know that, well, today's one of those days where something might happen. And so being aware of that to where you're prepared to get information so that if it happens in the evening, you have on local news information, then you can put a plan into effect. And your plan basically involves getting as low as you can and putting as many walls between you and the tornado as possible. If you have a basement, get in a basement. Get under the basement steps, say. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a basement, you want to get to a small interior room and get as low as you can. Closets are wonderful. Interior bathrooms are really good for that. And if you can, you want to make sure, think something like a bicycle helmet. Works really well for helping protect your head from getting hit. And make sure you take shoes in there. Because if something bad does happen to your house, that means there's going to be a lot of sharp, pointy things like nails and pieces of wood when you come out of your shelter. And so you want to make sure you can protect your feet. Mobile homes are not safe at all. So the people who live in mobile homes need to have a plan that allows them to move perhaps even before the tornado warning is issued and be paying enough attention to know that, I'm not in a warning yet, but boy, storms are heading my way. I should be looking for a better shelter than what I currently have.
If I'm outside and there's no physical structure where I can take shelter, what should I do then?
Well, praying is always a reasonably good option in that kind of situation. But you want to get as low, again, you still want to get as low as you possibly can. When we talk about being outside with no shelter available to you, we're basically talking about you making a choice between bad options. And we're trying to figure out what's the least worst option. But again, it's the same rules of get as low as you can, as you possibly can. And so if there's a ditch, get there. People will occasionally see pictures of debris collecting in ditches. I think that makes that a bad place to be. And that actually tells you that's a good place to be. Because the places where the debris isn't gathering are the places where the debris flew through. And you'd rather be where the debris is stopping than where the debris is flying.
Well, what if I'm in a vehicle and I find that a tornado warning is issued and actually sense that one is headed towards me? What do I do then?
Well, if you can, you want to drive away. And by that I mean drive, not drive along the path that the tornado is headed towards, but say if you had the option to drive at a 90 degree angle to the path, you do that. And we've seen this a lot. People tend to want to drive as close as they can and then stop, as opposed to, there's a really, really dark storm there and there's a warning out. Maybe I should stop here where I'm a few miles away from the bad place. Instead of driving right up as close as I can to where that's going to cross and hoping I don't get hit and then get stuck. Because what happens, frequently is that you'll end up getting caught in a place where you no longer have any good options.
Right.
Because traffic will be stopped. We have lots of people who, despite the fact that this is not a safe place to be, want to stop under highway overpasses. And particularly in urban areas, that's just a terrible idea. Under the overpass, the winds actually increase there. They're funneled through the little opening under the overpass. And if you park under an overpass, what you basically have done is you've stopped all the traffic behind you. And at that point, those people can't get through either. And now you have a traffic jam with the tornado approaching. And that's just it's not good for you, and it's really not good for all the other people in all the other vehicles.
Good advice, Dr. Brooks. We're just about out of time. As we wrap up, is there anything that you would like to share that we haven't yet covered?
I think one of the biggest things is the fact that when we think about tornado safety, almost all tornadoes are survivable. In fact, all tornadoes are survivable, and a lot of it comes down to taking the best possible safety actions. And that just involves you have to, even though it may not be very pleasant, if you take action, you can protect yourself against a tornado.
That's a good word. Thank you, sir. We've been talking with Dr. Harold Brooks. He is the Senior Research Scientist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, otherwise known as NOAA. And we have been discussing tornadic activity in the United States and how to protect ourselves from an event in our area. And Dr. Brooks, thank you for your time today.
You're very welcome. Hope you have a good day.
YouTube. And that's been our broadcast, and we invite you to be sure and join us again next week when we once again will examine a topic of interest to the Christian community here on Weekend Connection.
That concludes the online feature. By the way, BBN is on social media. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter.